Well, PV, you guys have your new album, Carved in Stone, now out in the States. And it's been out for a while worldwide, but you have just released it in the U.S. And what's the significance behind the title, Carved in Stone? What is the meaning behind the title, and what is the meaning behind the album?
Basically, we had first the song, the title song that was that gave the title to the album. The song is about misuse of young men for political deeds. You know, it's sending all these young boys in the war, so they get killed there for basically money reasons for the big industry and big politics. You know, which. I think it's a big lie, you know, and an abuse of young men, of their patriotism, you know. That's what the song is about, so we had a song we liked it very much as a title, so we took it for the whole album.
PV, you now have a new drummer in your band, Andre Hilgers, and how did you get him into the band?
So what happened was, we did this kind of project sampler for Nuclear Blast, this 20-year anniversary, Into the Light. Maybe you heard about this sampler where we wrote music and
I have both of them actually.
All right. So when we recorded this stuff, Andre was one of the session drummers, and right at this time we got all these problems with the previous drummer Mike,
mm-hmm.
and when we had to get him out of the band, and we were just jamming with Andre, and so we just thought, why not try to play some Rage stuff with him, you know? And it worked out perfectly from the very first moment. Plus, he was a very old fan of the band, a friend of the band, who liked especially the old material very much. So after we tried some other drummers also to just have something to compare, so we in the end we just thought Andre would be the best choice for the band, so we asked him to join, and he did. That's crazy.
Last song on the album, Lord of the Flies, was this based on the book Lord of the Flies?
The Lord of the Flies, yeah, it's not really based on the book, but the book was an inspiration for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In general, the whole album deals with kind of cynical, kind of, I wouldn't say negative, but kind of critical things about developments in our societies, you know, and the state of the world of today, you know. And the book Lord of the Flies also deals a little bit about this kind of stuff, you know, how a society develops when this kind of when there's no rules anymore, you know. And so I thought it's a little bit the same topic, you know. The book is like a little bit like a summary of what I did before. So this was the last song we did for the album, and I thought it might be cool to have this kind of thing also in the book, in the whole story, you know, in the whole album. So I did it kind of about the topic of the book, but not exactly about the story that was in the book, you know.
You've been around for 25 years now, the band Rage has, and PV, your sole original member, and you've been through quite a number of band members. And has it been difficult to go through this many people and to find new people?
Compared for 25 years and compared with other bands, I think we didn't have that much lineup changes over the years, especially the lineup before with Mike Tirana that lasted at least 8 years, which is quite long for this music business, I think. But of course, it's never nice, especially not for the fans, you know, where they get used to something, to this kind of chemistry thing, you know. But with, you know, you're always working with people, and people change over the years, you know. So it's like being in a band is like, especially in a three-piece band, it's kind of like a marriage or something like this, you know, like a relationship. And when people change, and this was a fact with Mike, you know, he changed personally quite a lot in the last years. So after a while, sometimes the situation comes up when it's impossible to go on working with each other. So then there's no other way than doing the change, you know. Otherwise, you would like lose the whole band or so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And to find new musicians over here, I guess it's the same in America. It's not really that hard, you know. So there's so many people that play instruments, that play metal, you know, that like to play in your band, you know. Especially Rage is kind of an established act that a lot of people just would love to play in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really a problem to find find a new member. So maybe it's getting harder over the years to find the right member, you know. But sometimes you're lucky. I think at the moment we're quite lucky with Andre. It just fits really very good, and the chemistry is perfect at the moment, you know. And as long as he won't change too much, you know, I guess we can go on like this for a while. Hope so. And I think my relationship with Victor, with our guitar player, he's now for nearly 10 years in the band or so, is very good still. We have the same ideas, the same same reasons why we do this, you know. So I guess we're going to continue for, yeah, as long as we can play, I guess. As possible, you know. There's no reason for us to make a change about this, you know, because the way our relationship works is very free for everybody. They can do any kind of side project, whatever they want, you know. No one is, like, limited to only doing this, you know. So there's not really a reason to stop doing this as long as we can work with each other, and this really works perfectly. So I'm pretty positive about keeping this lineup, at least the lineup with Victor, for hopefully the rest of the career of this band. So let's see, knock on wood, and let's see what happens.
The very last song on the album, Lord of the Flies, that I brought up before, has a lot of classical overtones to it and a lot of classical music involved with it. And you guys have done albums with a lot of classical music in the background and in the songs. And is it difficult to compose such a thing, especially for a metal band?
For us, it's no difficulty at all, because Victor, he's a perfectly trained classical musician. You know, that was the first thing he did in his life. When he was five or so, he started already studying cello and piano. You know, he comes from a very musical family. His father is a kind of famous composer in White Russia. He's a professor for all kind of music things. I don't know exactly how this would be called in English. Basically, he's like a ministry or so for ministry is the wrong word. how do you call this? Like an official for music here in this country. You know, he works directly under the president of White Russia, and
like a conductor.
Yeah, conductor, composer. You know, he's like Professor Dr. Dmitry Zvolsky. That's his title. You know. Anyway, Victor grew into this when he was already a little boy, you know, and he had studied music for 25 years or so, I think, first 25 years of his life. You know, he didn't do anything else than studying music, all categories, whatever you can study. So composing something classical and arranging some classical arrangements for him is nothing, you know. He does this in 5 minutes, you know, with doing a phone call at the same time, you know. He's writing down the notes, you know. So for as long as we have Victor in the band, there's really no problem to do this kind of stuff, you know. And when we started doing first orchestration things in more than 10 years ago, I had some guy from outside of the band that helped with arrangements. And for what reason we started with this, you know, maybe because just we got the chance from our record company. They gave us a special budget for this, so we could experiment a little bit on this, and it worked out to be kind of popular over here in Europe. So we continued for this for a while, and then after we haven't done something like this for nearly 10 years or so, we just thought it might be nice to do something again like this, you know, because a lot of fans were asking when will you do something with orchestration again and stuff. So for Speak of the Dead, we just decided to do one long track, you know, this sweet Lingua Mortis 25-minute track, actually just divided in some extra parts, you know, for this kind of anniversary of our first orchestration album, you know, Lingua Mortis. But it's basically more like a side thing for us, you know. It's not the general sound of the band. It's just like an addition to the general sound, you know. But we're going to keep this option, of course.
You did a Lingua Mortis Orchestra EP, a live EP with a classical score to your music way back, you know, 10, 11 years ago now. And do you guys plan on maybe doing something like this again?
I don't know if you have the newest version from Japan. Has included a DVD with a live show that we did last year at the Wacken Open Air Festival with full orchestra. And so we released this kind of live thing already, as a DVD. I don't know if it's out in America at the moment. Maybe they put it out later. So like in Japan, they did first the regular album, and then a couple of months later, they released this DVD also, you know. In Germany, both came out at the same time.
Now, I've been asking a lot of musicians that have been around a long time the same question. And basically, what's it like making an album today as compared to, say, 20, 25 years ago? I mean, what are some of the biggest differences or the biggest difference that you see making records today as opposed to, say, I don't know, 20 years ago?
Biggest difference, I would say, is first of all, the studio techniques today. It's quite easy. You record everything in digital, and so that's a big help. 20 years ago, you really had to play your stuff live in the studio. Today, you can do all this easy overdubbing. You don't even have to use a studio anymore. You can basically do this at home, you know. So makes it all a little bit easier this way. But I mean, the music we're doing is still the same handmade music like we did 20 years ago. So just playing the stuff or so, it's not really a difference, I think. Just easier to create a good sound, you know.
As a band, you guys have been a three-piece for quite a number of times, but when you started out, and for a brief period in the 90s, you were a four-piece band. And do you guys like being a three-piece band as opposed to a four-piece band?
My personal favorite lineup is always a three-piece band, you know. When we had a twin guitar lineup twice in the career, this was just because we didn't have a guitar player that was able to do this, you know. Because I think you have to play on a little bit higher level, you know, as a guitar player, when you want to do it all alone, you know. Especially for this kind of technical music that Rage is doing, you cannot just do this by just some riffing or so and then stop and play a solo, you know, like these twin guitar players, you know. You have to combine both, you know. So it was always a question of the guitar player who was in the band, you know, if we could do it with just one guitar or with two, you know. So as soon as we had a guitar player like Victor in the band, you know, I, of course, supposed to stay as a three-piece. Also, Victor likes this very much, so it was clear the decision not to take a second guitar player.
Nuclear Blast Into the Light album, the Nuclear Blast All-Stars, was it difficult writing music for other singers instead of just writing music for Rage?
Yeah, of course, it's something else when you compose songs or write songs for other singers, you know, for other people who have to perform them. But it was also a nice experience for us, you know. It opened a little bit our range, look on the things, you know. And I think it was a big inspiration also for Carbon Stone, which we wrote directly after this. I can imagine that the direction that Carbon Stone came out was pretty much under our impression of the material we wrote for these other singers.
When you wrote the songs for the album, did you already know what singers you were writing these songs for?
Yeah, we already had the choice of singers who would do it, and we wrote directly for those singers. So, yeah, this was the challenge, you know.
And there's a lot of different people on there. That's what I was saying. It's a lot of different voices to write stuff for.
Yeah, it was quite difficult because there were also some other singers involved at the beginning. For example, Joachim from Hammerfall was. We wrote a song for him, but then after a while he was getting sick, and then he couldn't go to the studio at the right point, and in the end he was just quitting the whole thing, and we had this song left over. And then some other singers were coming in, you know, like Taya, the ex singer of Nightwish. And it was very difficult to write something for her because, you know, she's very much under the influence of her management, I think, which is her husband.
Mm-hmm.
the guy always demanded something different, you know. We wrote something, and it was never good enough for him, you know. He always like, oh, this is too heavy, oh, this is too soft now, you know, and whatever. But in the end, we found a song for her.
Rage hasn't really played much in the U.S., and have you received a lot of show offers to play over here?
Yeah, we had a couple of offers over the years, but you know, the money was always very short, and we calculated everything over and over, and just we were just about losing a lot of money when we were doing this. And you know, we have to live from our band from doing this year, and we just couldn't afford to pay for it. You know, that was basically the reason we never did anything. We just played some, I think, one short appearance so far at the Rock Power Festival in Atlanta. It was the only thing we ever did so far, which is basically nothing. For some reason, we never really cracked the market, or we never really even got one tiny foot in the market. I don't know, really know why. Yeah. Probably, I think, this kind of style we're playing is quite difficult to sell over there. There's not too many fans for this kind of classical heavy metal thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't do this new metal thing, we don't do this thrash thing, you know, which goes a lot better, I guess.
Rage is considered by many the big four of German metal bands. You know, Rage, Running Wild, Helloween, and Gravedigger. And what was it like coming up through that scene? Maybe give us some perspective on what it was like to come up through that music scene in Germany at the time. And, you know, a lot of great bands there. And what was it like coming up through that scene when you guys first started out?
Yeah, I don't know. It was like a fever. And in the early 80s, everybody started in all the corners of our republic, you know. And at the same time, probably. And after a while, first fan teams were coming up, and we just read about each other and played the first shows. So we met all the other bands. There was never any competition or so, you know. It was more like we started making friendship with everybody, you know. And then two or three labels putting out the stuff at this time, they were signing all these bands right away, and it all happened within 1 year or so, you know. And then the stuff was getting famous, you know. Especially then in Japan, they were crazy for this stuff, you know. So, you know, the bands were growing. It was a crazy time in the early 80s, you know. Something completely different than it is today, you know. Today, it's I don't think it's so easy for a young band here in Germany to get recognized in the world's market, you know, at the moment.
Now, why do you think...
It's focused on Finland and Sweden, you know.
Yeah.
You guys have played a lot of shows in Japan, and... Is metal still pretty big over there?
Oh, it was shrinking actually. We just back from Japan 2 weeks ago, and for an established band like us, it's still okay. You know, we can't tour there every year, but at least every 2 years or so, we can go over play some shows. But it's not the same like it was in the late 80s or early 90s or so, when it was really huge over there, and there was a kind of. German metal history thing, you know, they really made a teenage thing out of this, you know, with all the screaming kids, you know. And today, I mean, the audience grew with the bands, and they're now middle 30s or so, and of course, the audience is shrinking. A lot of people get out of it, you know, but there's not really young fans coming into it, like, for example, here in Europe. There's a lot of young kids coming into the metal scene and getting interested in even in the older bands like us, you know. So we have a lot of fresh blood over here. I don't know how it is in America, maybe similar or so, with this more thrashy things, you know. But in Japan, it's an older audience still likes this music, and the young kids, they have all their domestic acts over there, this kind of, I don't know, Japanese rock stuff, you know.
PV, the last Iron Maiden show I went to, I saw a lot of young kids. You know, normally when I've seen them play here in the past, you see a lot of 30-year-old, the 40-year-old people that grew up with the band, but this time around, I saw a lot of 16-year-olds, and, you know, being 30, I felt like an old man. And, you know, have you seen a lot of this, and what do you think of a lot of young people being into this music?
Yeah, it's really a miracle for me also. I mean, it's good, you know. This is like, this music is going to survive at least another 20 years. And, why it is, I really don't know. It's a kind of new fashion or so. I don't know. Maybe it's cool for the kids, you know, to listen to this stuff again. You know, there's always this kind of oldies thing, you know. They always focus back on the 70s and the 80s with on the pop scene, you know. So maybe it's also like focusing back on the rock scene of these years, you know, of these ages. Probably.
As many people may or may not know, Rage was also known as Avenger when they first started out back in 1983, 1984. And those first two Avenger albums, have you ever decided to reissue those albums on CD?
It was actually reissued in the middle 90s, this year in Europe and in Japan. And, I mean, I have the rights. I'm holding the rights for this. If I would find anybody interested in releasing it, I would give it to them. But our actual record company at the moment, Nuclear Blast, they were not too much interested in it because it was already out in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
And they think most of the fans, they still have it. And if someone is interested, just downloads it, you know. I think that's the biggest problem today with re-releasing old albums or so, that everybody who is actually interested has it already as a download or so.
Uh-huh.
So there's not going to be too many people going to really pay for it, you know.
Do you think that illegal downloading has hurt you guys at all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, especially for, not that much in the metal scene maybe, but in general, I think it's a really big problem for the music scene, for the music industry, you know. You just have to check the advances the record companies pay. They're getting lower and lower and lower every year, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's, meanwhile, we can hardly record an album for this money, you know. And 10, 15 years ago, we used to live from this money, you know, from advance for an album that was enough for a whole band to live a year or so,
mm-hmm.
or more, you know. And today, you can hardly do the album with the advance, you know. Today, we riff 100% from the live business, you know. So you see that's how much this downloading changed the whole music industry, you know, the whole music scene, you know.
It seems to me with the digital age and the downloading age, you're basically going to produce an album to promote your tour as opposed to touring to promote your album. Don't you agree?
Actually, you just said it. That's what it is. You just do new albums to promote your new tour. Exactly. Sounds ridiculous, but it is like this.
PB, I guess my next question to you, and I ask every band that I interview for the first time or even the second time if I don't get to ask them the question, what's one of the strangest things that's ever happened to you on tour?
On tour, the strangest thing?
I know there's a lot of them.
The whole thing, touring, is strange anyway. I can't remember something very special. It was not really an alien that grabbed our tour bus and stuff like this, you know. It's a hard question for me. I mean, I don't know. for me, all this is so normal. Meanwhile, you know, I'm doing this for over 20 years, and actually, everything is quite normal for me. You know, I don't find any coincidence. That was really weird, even for me.
So let's go influences, PB. What were some of your biggest influences as a musician growing up, etc., etc.?
Yeah, I have to start in my early childhood. It was the Beatles. I was a big fan of John Lennon of the Beatles when I was, I don't know, five or so. It was N60s, around 1970 or so. This was my first inspiration to grab a guitar and try to play their songs. And also I was directly writing my own Beatles songs, you know, when I was a small boy, you know. And then later, also around this time, some cousins of mine that were starting their first hard rock band, you know, when, you know, at around this time, Deep Purple came out with Deep Purple in Rock. Maybe you remember this.
Oh, yeah, that's one of my favorite albums ever.
Yeah, so this was really heavy. And when I first heard this at my cousin's house, you know, this was like a initial starting whatever for me, you know. So I guess this kind of early bands, Deep Purple, Led Zeppelin, this been also big inspiration for me to get into this this music. You know, at this time it was not even heavy metal. This word was created, I think, around 1980 or so,
mm-hmm.
late 70s, 79 or so. I think the first time I heard this word heavy metal for this kind of music. Before it was just hard rock or whatever, you know. And anyway, I was already starting my first band in the late 70s, you know, the first steps, you know. And first I was guitar player in my very first band, and you know, all these little boys at this time wanted to play guitar, and no one wants to play the bass, so we had like three guitar players in the band and no bass player. And as my main focus was changing more and more to be a singer, then I thought, okay, if no one else is going to do it, I'm going to do it. At this time, I was getting into Motorhead, and so I just liked the Rickenbacker bass from Lemmy, you know, just liked the shape of this guitar. So I thought, okay, that's a good reason now to buy a Rickenbacker bass. and got me a rig bigger bass, and I was the bass player.
Mm-hmm.
Just for coincidence.
What's one of the most rewarding things for you as a musician?
I think one of the most rewarding thing actually is for me. There's two things that are still that much impressing for me that I still love to do this, and I never ever want to stop doing it. First is writing new stuff, and then first time we play this, we play a new song with the band. You know, this is like a very exciting thing for me, just to see how an idea gets realized and becomes real. You know.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing is actually the playing live for the fans. It's like a big energy exchange, you know, and this kind of thing is, this is when you get this energy back from the audience, you know, this is so wonderful. Can't compare it if you never experience it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these two things are keeping me doing it, you know.
For my last question, I heard you collected fossils and bones and stuff like that. And is that true? And is that one of your biggest hobbies?
Yeah, I collect fossils and bones, skeletons. I'm actually a preparator for osteological preparations. That's my special thing, you know.
Uh-huh.
I learned this 20 years ago already, or even longer. And yeah, if I wouldn't be a musician, I would surely do this for a job. And so as I make my money with music, I'm doing this still as for a hobby, and I have a huge collection here at home. You know, I always say my home is my museum. You know, you can really go through my rooms here, and it's like being in a natural history museum. You know, I have everything about bones from very early Stone Ages to now. You know, all kinds of animals. The only thing that's missing is an elephant skull. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't get it up here, you know. I live in the third floor. I couldn't get it up here. But I prepared already like three elephant skulls for a preparation school here in my neighbor city in Bochum. That's where I also do my preparations. You know, work for them like a freelancer.
Mm-hmm. Did this type of fascination, I guess, or hobby inspire, say, like the album The Missing Link?
Yeah, sure. It's, this hobby always inspires me a lot, also in writing songs, you know, about my relationship about death and all this kind of stuff, you know. Because you see everything from a different angle, you know.